KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome, and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, but before Mr. Kelly takes off, Mr. Kelly, we had kind of some rough weather, and I understand you took a spill.
Oh, yes. I was leaving the house yesterday coming to work, and I was looking for the peacock because he wasn't where he usually is, and I was
saying, hey, Henry the peacock.
Henry the peacock. I said, where are you at, Henry? And, man, I just went right down, and it was a very thin layer that you couldn't even see was there. And it was just, what a surprise.
Really?
So, a little sore. You know, an old guy falls, it's
You're not that old. What are you, 29?
Oh, my goodness.
I take a morning walk every morning, you know, sometime between 6 and 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, the last couple of days, I've had to really take it slow.
Yeah.
I haven't taken any spills, but you know, I've had some in the past. I certainly try to avoid them.
I walked through the snow this morning instead of walking on the concrete because I was
that
like, and
sense.
Of course, the morning it was dark. I came out at 4 o'clock.
Ah.
And so it's like, I'm going to stay in the snow and then I won't fall.
Well, I'm glad you didn't get hurt too bad.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, folks.
That's an evil laugh, isn't it, James? That's kind of, yeah.
Folks, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about your landscape, your houseplants, or whatever, well, I certainly medical things, of course, no. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Questions, concerns, or comments. Saturday mornings we get together, and we've been doing it for over 25 years now. And we have a roundtable discussion on what's impacting your backyard. How about that front yard? How about the in-between the houses, the side yards? Especially garden spaces. A taste of the tropics, yes. What's wrong with your Christmas cactus? Why aren't they blooming? How about your poinsettia? You have to say settia. You can't say poinsettia. That's wrong. Except that's a colloquialism. We always say poinsettia. Anyway, how to improve your soils? How about pruning and shearing? And the snow really was bending some branches on some trees and things like that. When we have snows, please just don't go out and knock the snow off your plants, your shrubs or anything like that, because it can do more damage than just leaving the snow there. So anyway, my thoughts, concerns, orchestrates, maybe help you solidify your options with the final judgment. And this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you're listening. Another very important player today is James. He's producing the show, so when you call in, James will need to know just your name and where you're calling from. He doesn't need to know the topics or anything else. And I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline for quite a while, and during the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. So you can get on my website. And MikeMillerDesigns.com, the homepage, has my email address and phone number where I can be reached. And people are contacting me, and they have in the past, where I can send email you a gift certificate if you'd like to give a gift certificate of a walk and talk for somebody that you know. So anyway, today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting. Tradition always keeps going, yes. And this is the last Saturday before the new season begins. So tomorrow is the first day of winter. So I always take a walk around my own yard on the last Saturday before the seasonal change. Thank goodness there's a warming spell, so Mr. Kelly doesn't probably have to worry too much more about slipping and sliding and falling. And we'll start in my landscape, the alley bed, which is on the east side of our property. The purple coneflowers, man, those spiky seed heads. I was surprised there's not more birds there eating the seeds, but there has been quite a few. And it's blended in there with a lemon verbena. Lemon verbena, with this cold snap that was early on in November, it really turned them all black, except the one few little bit of foliage right at ground level. Anything above ground level was blackened. Also, at that same cold spell in November, the some of the foliage on my small leaf boxwood back there got some cold damage as well. The sedum ground cover, yes, it looks like green confetti on the ground. And some of the stems, of the sweet alyssum, which I've already cut off and everything else. You can still see evidence of that, and it's just kind of there resting. Westward we go into the backyard, and along the fence I have seasonal decorations. And with a lot of my pots, what I've done is across the street from where we live is Christie Park. There's a couple huge white pines there. So I go over there and collect off the ground the pine cones, and I use those for seasonal decorations on the top of my pots. So the snow is still present out there. The Mugo pine, the two boxwood, the Leland cypress, they have more decorations on them. The only perennials that are showing any kind of presence at all is a palace purple coral bells. You can still see the foliage of them. Everything else is underground. The zoysia front and backyard both has been tanned by wintertime. And I've made sure I've done a couple cuttings. My blade height on the zoysia is about, 2.5 inches or so. In the front yard, which faces west, faces Christie Park, there's a trellis trio, and I've dotted that with ornaments and streamers and things like that. So the beds along the street, well, during that slippery stuff, you know, it was on Monday, I think, I was sitting on the couch just kind of looking at the snow coming down in the across the street in the park, and I heard a bang. I thought, what in the world was that? And I thought, uh-oh, because the city water has been doing some repairs to some water lines a couple of houses down from us. And I thought somebody has driven their car into the giant hole that they had dug. But no, it wasn't that. Somebody had actually slid and hit the stop sign on the corner there. So, and I, you know, they were having a hard time getting, you know, going back in the direction they wanted to. So the stop sign still lays dead on the ground. The sugar maples, we have three. One is still holding on to a few brown leaves. Normally, they drop them all by now. And underneath these sugar maples, the green moss mingles with some sedums. At the front door is where I have several pots and more pots that are top-dressed with the white pine cones and that I collect in the park. And today's show is... After today's show, I'll have a closer look at my landscape now that the snow will be finally melted off after a couple days. And I'll enjoy just being outdoors and figuring out which birds are going to be stopping by and what they're going to be going after. For some reason, they seem to love the maple squirts from the sugar maples. So, but only certain varieties of birds like that. But anyway, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. If you're going to give a gift of like a house plant or a poinsettia or poinsettia, you know, depending upon how you want to pronounce it, it's like peony or peony. Doesn't matter. We all understand what kind of plant it is. But make sure that wherever you purchase it, they wrap it up pretty well. Now, today, later on, it's not going to be much of a problem because the temperature is going to rise. But when it's cold and you carry those things out from a store and put them in your car, and then you carry them from your car into a house or wherever you're, you know, to, let's say, whoever you're giving the gift to, the plants can be really damaged. So just be cautious and careful. Whenever you make a purchase and the temperatures are below freezing, it could do some damage to even, you know, poinsettias or poinsettias or Christmas cactus or whatever you happen to be giving. So just, you know, that is something to keep in mind. Also, keeping in mind, I don't know if you have a cut tree, if you have a live tree. I don't know if people really do live trees anymore. Live tree meaning it has a root system that ultimately will be planted in your landscape or donated to somebody or something along that line. The people across the street when I was growing up in Ellisville on Maple Lane, the Harmons, Mr. Harmon always got live trees. He got Scotch pines for the most part. And it was like a Scotch pine forest, ultimately, on the side yard. Because each year they'd take them out and then plant them, and they really got pretty substantial. Now, the Scotch pine is not the ideal, necessarily, Christmas tree to have, but it certainly worked out well way back then. And just be conscious, if you have any kind of tree that's a live tree, even if it's cut, that you make sure that you keep plenty of moisture in that dish so you can keep the tree from, let's say, dropping more needles earlier on than what you would anticipate. It's, I forget where we were. Oh, I think it was it Eckert's? I think a couple weeks ago, I was surprised how many people were buying trees and, you know, putting them up on top of their car, like that's basically the only way you can get them home. And so I thought maybe we'd gotten to the point where everybody's going to have an artificial tree. We have a tree that we actually got when we were on vacation in Miami, and it hardly is a traditional Christmas type tree. It's chrome. So we just thought this is really unusual and very unique, and so that's what we decided to do. And we've done that for the last couple of years. We may end up going another direction. So it looks like we got a phone call, and it's Mary, and Mary lives in Crestwood. Hi, Mary.
Hi. The little pine trees that you get from Shooks for as gifts at Christmas time, can those be planted outside next spring?
If they're Alberta spruces, yes.
Okay, no, I don't think so. I think they're a pine of some kind.
It should be a type of pine that is, you know, they should have a tag on them that tells you what it is.
Okay.
So, you know, but for the most part, I don't know if I'd leave it inside all winter long and take it out. Probably what I'd do is transition it and put it in by a window in your garage so it can get used to the cold. And then I'd probably get it planted outside before, let's say, a couple months from now, because it's not going to survive in your house. Now, there's a Norfolk Island pine. That's one of the, types that could be sold this time of year. But that's not a tree that's hardy in the outdoors at all.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, well, same to you. And also, historically, traditionally, I don't get, let's say, a pine tree. I get a rosemary tree. And what this is a rosemary plant that has been pruned, multiple times to make it sort of like in a cone shape. And I've been probably getting them every year for, I would say 10, maybe even 15 years. So this year we got one, and it's sitting in front of the window on the north side of our house. And what I do is I rotate it every day or so it can get light. Thank goodness we've gotten some sunlight lately. But then I take it outside, and then I put it in a pot in the landscape someplace. But the rosemary is not really a hardy plant for this region, so consequently, they always, when it starts to get severely cold the following winter, then they, but they're kind of fun to have. I mean, just the fragrance and everything else is fantastic, and it's kind of nice to have something that's green, that's small, that you can kind of have on your tabletop. So that's a rosemary. Anyway, let's go to Dave, and Dave lives in DeSoto. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Mike, I've got a black gum tree that I planted about 2 years ago. When I planted it, it was about a 2-inch caliber. And it's basically held the same shape since I planted it. And I wanted to know, can I prune it now? And can you give me some pruning tips? I'm trying to make the tree fuller.
Personally, I would leave it alone for at least a couple more years. Black gums are very slow growing, and by not doing any kind of pruning, you're maintaining the leaf population as much as there possibly can be. And what happens is for a tree to grow, it has to have the nutrients and moisture to come up from the root system, and then it's translocated up to the foliage. Then the foliage uses sunlight to make chlorophyll, which is plant food. So if you start taking branches off to try to make it fuller, I don't think that, it's going to kind of, it could possibly mess up the process. So I wouldn't do any pruning probably at least for 4 or 5 years.
Okay, Mike, I'll do that.
And, it's just, to try to get it to be as healthy as it possibly can be before you do any kind of pruning. And black gums are not necessarily going to be really thick, dense trees, but good luck with that. Black gum's one of my favorites, so.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling. And if anybody else has any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Black gum sometimes sounds like sweet gum, and they're not the same kind of tree at all. Black gums have a shiny, kind of an oval-shaped leaf that gets fantastic fall color. As I said, they're slow-growing, and also they can take a wet environment as well. The name black gum comes from the fact that the fruits that they produce have a black juice, and actually it was used way back when for people that wanted to, let's say, well, I think even the Native American Indians used it to sort of tint things, leather and things along that line. So that's where the name black gum comes from. Botanical name is Nyssa, N-Y-S-S-A, and then Sylvatica. So, as I said before, if anybody has any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. The ground, I'm not sure. When I go get home today, I'm going to go out with a shovel and see if the ground is frozen. If the ground isn't frozen yet, you still have the option or the opportunity to get some deciduous or evergreen trees and actually do the installation this time of year. So you can still do that. But if you have a smaller tree, get some kind of wrap, like a plastic wrap, to go around the base of the tree. And what that does is that prevents wildlife, rodent types, from chewing on the bark. Because a lot of times, they're not necessarily going after the food aspect, but they're going for the moisture. And that's really, really important as well. So let's see, where should we go first? Let's head out to St. Peter's and go into Dave's yard. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a quick question. A guy at work, kind of an old timer, that has always said the best time to plant grass seed is right before it snows. And I always thought that was kind of contrary to, you know, like you put seed down when it's going to be like freezing cold.
That right.
Doesn't make sense. But hey, that's what he always said. I don't know if there's any validity to that.
That's old school stuff, and it doesn't really apply at all. So, but you're absolutely right. I mean, you put it out there, the ground's super cold. Who knows how many rains and everything else we're going to have before it actually has a chance to germinate? Because germination is all related to, you know, soil temperatures. And so consequently, it may take several months before the soil is going to get warm enough to actually cause that seed to germinate and start, you know, having root growth. So consequently, who knows where that seed's going to end up in those couple months?
Is it possible, though, that, I mean, I guess since there, I guess the theory is that the ground's going to be kind of soggy and the seed will get a chance to kind of get in the soil a little bit and kind of maybe a little covered up so it doesn't blow away. And is that kind of, I don't know why else they would say that.
I don't know. To be honest with you, to me, it was the grain elevators at that time had grass seed and they were just promoting it to make money. I don't think it had anything to do with reality.
Okay.
So,
good enough.
I mean, it's, you know, maybe people have had great success with it, but I have never heard of it. I've worked at the botanical garden. It was never done there. I've known plenty of people that have had lawn companies. They don't do it. So you put the seed down when the ground is getting warm. So that September is when it's the warmest. That's the ideal time. Or even if you put it down earlier in the year, it could just lay there for several weeks before it germinates because the ground is still cold. So putting it down even after the snows have finished and everything else, when the ground is still cold, it's just not going to do anything.
Yeah. Huh. It's funny. Good to know.
No, great. Well, thanks, Dave.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for having me on your show. And let's head out to O'Fallon and go into Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Hey, listen, great program as usual. You may have answered this some other time, but I didn't hear it. And that is the pruning of raspberries and of blackberries, the canes. Is it too late to prune them?
No, it isn't. But I would, you know, the older canes, the ones that are the biggest, take those down all the way to the ground. Any of the younger ones or smaller ones, leave those alone. Because the older ones will get to the point, in other words, the ones that have, let's say, a bigger diameter, they're going to get to the point where they're not going to be productive anymore. All they're going to be doing is just sucking up nutrients and moisture and everything else and preventing the other ones from maybe having the adequate nutrients and moisture that they need. So, no, you can still do it this time of year.
Take the big ones all the way back.
Right.
Some of the things that I just read online, and I trust you more than what's online, by the way, some of the things I read online are to take the big ones and no longer than 24 inches. You say all the way to the ground.
Yeah, because they don't really sprout. Yeah, I never see side shoots coming off some of the larger canes. Now, maybe that does occur, and I've only seen X amount of numbers through the 40-plus years that I've been playing around in the outdoors, actually even as a kid. But so I don't know why I just take them down to 24 inches.
Okay, and you're right, the rabbits are out. They've gotten I didn't get my wired cages up in time, and I've had some nibbles on some of the lower ones, and you're right, they just... They make incisions cleaner than the doctor. They just really whack it off.
That's very true. Yeah, I mean, they're desperate. So this is the time of year for that kind of thing. Well, thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, it's just a question of, the canes, like on raspberries or blackberries or whatever it happens to be, why leave, one at 24 inches? There's probably not going to be any foliage down there or anything else, so it's not even helping the colony. So that just, that to me just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Let's head out to Edwardsville and go into Julie's yard. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Thank you for your show.
Sure. Thanks for having me on your show.
I have a question about some lilies, and I don't know the name of the kind, but they're very different from, like, daylilies. They come up in one single tall stem, and it just has little triangular-shaped leaves that come out on each side of the stem, and they're just little. And when they bloom, they're very spectacular. They're very big blooms and gold color, not as big as amaryllis, but big.
Right.
But this year, they had to be moved at a bad time because of some construction, so I didn't know what to do, and I put them in a pot, and I put them in a room that isn't heated, but it does get a lot of warmth from the sun. But the stems turned brown anyway, so I just cut them off. But are they? Is it possible that I could plant them in the yard again in the spring and they would come back, or are they doomed?
Well, it's hard to say, but before I went to the trouble of digging a hole and replanting them and everything else, when you take them out of the pot, I'm assuming, when you put them in the pot, did you use regular just dirt from outside, or did you use like a potting mix?
A potting mix.
Okay, so it'll be easy, just tip them on their side and kind of shake them out and just get all the potting mix away from it and see. There should be something that kind of looks like I'm going to describe it, let's say, as a miniature-looking pineapple, like a bulb, more or less. It's not a bulb like a daffodil or something like that. It has texture. So these are Asiatic lilies. There are several different types of lilies that you're describing. So consequently, see if it's still firm and everything else. If it's still firm, the bulb, then certainly plant it. Plant them probably like let's say 3 to 3 inches deep or so, and in a well-drained soil. And if they're not firm, if they're mushy or non-existent, then don't waste your time and effort.
Okay, so there is hope, though. They might be there. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, and the best way to find out is to tip them out of the pot and shake the potting mix off. So that's the best thing you can do. Well, thanks, Julie. And let's head over to Daniel's yard. And Daniel lives in Salem. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I had a question regarding Russian sage. We had planted it maybe 5 years ago. And the first year it came up, it took off. And then every year after that, the large portion of the plant seems to die, and the small shoots kind of the side shoots take off every year. So I didn't know if that was normal or we should be pruning it or cutting it back each year.
Well, that's not necessarily normal because the above ground growth can, you know, depending upon the weather and exposure and things like that, it should stay persistent and then put it, you know, produce foliage and then consequently those pale blue flowers the following year. So the colonizing, in other words, those side shoots as you're seeing, they are colonizers, so they should do that. But the original big plant, you know, they want to have a very dry soil, well drained, and they want to make sure that you don't over fertilize them or anything like that. They don't like a whole lot of fertilizer. And because they have that grayish foliage, they're a great plant if you live in an area where there's deer, because deer generally don't like fuzzy gray foliage plants. So this is a good plant, and why, you know, let's say the main plant is dying, you know, in your situation, it's a little tough to say.
Okay.
But that's
okay,
not necessarily what should happen.
Okay. Well, we haven't been able to pinpoint it, but it just seems like the large portion of the plant each year doesn't live. But, I mean, the side shoots take off, and they're almost as big as that by the end of the, you know, the growing season.
Right. Well, maybe it's exposure and everything else that's causing that. But so you should be, you know, you should be fine. Again, no fertilizing and just a well-drained soil situation, which you must have, or else it wouldn't be putting the side shoots out.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Hi, this is Bob Costas, proud KMOX alum, and from my family to yours, happy holidays.
Happy holidays from KMOX.
Yes, folks, if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head out to Ferguson and see what's going on with Sheila. Hi, Sheila. Hello, Sheila, are you there? Hello. Uh-oh, Sheila.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Yes, I have a good question for you. Where can I buy a rosemary plant? I knew you'd be laughing.
No, I basically, where I get them is I get Trader Joe's. There's
okay.
Plenty of garden centers that have them. Whole Foods has them. So I get them. There are all kinds of places. Year-round garden centers. Now, the big box garden center type things, I don't think they're going to have them.
Like Deerberg's probably wouldn't have them?
Nah, my guess
okay.
is no. But they
okay.
may. But,
right.
you know, it's the year-round ones that are going to probably have them more so than the other ones. And like I say, Trader Joe's and Whole Foods have them.
Yeah, I go to Trader Joe's a lot. Sounds good.
Great. Good luck.
Okay, thanks. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Yeah, the rosemary plants, I mean, the fragrance is unbelievable. I don't use them too much. I'm not a, you know, I don't cook a whole lot, so I don't use a lot of rosemary in my cooking, but it's still pretty nice. Anyway, let's head over to Noel, and they live in St. Louis. Hi.
Good afternoon, or
Hi.
Good morning to you.
Yes.
My question's about, I have some large burning bushes. They've been planted for over 20 years. I looked it up on the internet, and it said that you could trim those back in November, and they'd never been trimmed back before. They were about 8 or 9 feet tall. I just cut those things back to about 3 to 4 feet tall. Am I killing them?
You very well could have.
Oh, wow.
You may not have. They're pretty tough, but the fact that you, I don't know how big they were originally, but I never really liked to take off more than 20% at a time.
Oh, wow. Okay. I took off half of it.
Okay. The reason why I'm saying that is a burning bush, pretty much like any kind of shrub, will have buds for foliage and slash they even flower, but the flowers are not something you even notice. And they're generally going to be in the newer growth, and the insides of the plants don't have a whole lot of buds slash foliage. So consequently, when you've eliminated all the exterior, then where are the flower, not the flower, where are the foliage buds going to be able to push out some growth? Because as I told a listener earlier, The plant needs to take up nutrients and moisture through the root system and send it up to the leaves. Then the leaves use sunlight with those nutrients and moisture to make food to keep the plant healthy. So that's the sort of the disadvantage of taking off all that much at once.
Wow, it was a pretty big, nice bush. Well, two of them actually sitting side by side that blocked the view of one of those big green electric boxes.
Ah, you may be. They may be okay. They are pretty tough. But the thing about pruning, personally, I don't like to, even with deciduous things. Later and later you get, and right before it's going to, who knows how cold it's going to get, you've cut it back to this point. And so consequently, if we get a severe, stretch of cold, even the stems that are left, could be cold damaged. And then consequently, it could be even smaller than what you anticipated. And then the chances of having any kind of foliage buds on those, what would be left, is even going to be less of a chance of that happening.
Wow. Well, I guess spring will tell.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and I enjoy the show.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. So anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Got time for a couple calls if you'd like to get an answer to your questions or make a comment. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We moved to our home about 12 or 13 years ago from Soulard. What I wanted to do is have an access all the way around the house. So what I put in or had put in was a steel edger, and I backfilled from the steel edger to the house with gravel. And then there's landscape fabric underneath that. And it was proof in the pudding, or proof in the reality. The landscape fabric definitely helps as far as weed germinations, but only if the weeds are perennial weeds that are coming up from the root systems from underneath the landscape fabric, or also some seeds that were laying there from the weeds. So that's been fine, but as a result of that, I still get weeds that come in, blow in, who knows how they get into the gravel, but in between the steel edger and and the foundation of the house. And right now, the things that I'm finding or seeing most is henbit. I'm seeing that, especially on one side of our house, and also chickweed. So those have been the most prevalent, being able to, let's say, get themselves where the seeds will come and fall into the gravel. And even though the landscape fabric's there, they can still root. They'll germinate. They'll send the roots down through the landscape fabric, and they do really pretty well. So it's just too bad they're stupid weeds. But anyway, again, it's henbit and chickweed, other cool season weeds. So in other words, these are weeds that germinated. They're annuals, so they come back every year. They germinated last August, and I should put a pre-emergent down, but I kind of just like to play around with it and just to kind of see what's going to come up and where they're going to come up. And mainly it's on one side of our house where they seem to. So there's just why there's more prolific weed seeds on that side, annual weed seeds, than the rest of it, I'm not really sure. But so that's one of the things that you need to be thinking about or just taking a look at. So in your cool season lawn, just go out there and take a look. The snow is really going to be melted today if it's going to get up to 50. And just look down and see if you see anything that has a broadleaf weed, but or a broad leaf. But also, if it's an annual bluegrass, it's a bluegrass, but it only lasts 1 year. So consequently, it's going to look like grass. So you're going to go, is this part of my lawn? If it's in the zoysia and it's green, then yes, it is probably the annual bluegrass. If it's in your fescues or bluegrasses, it's going to be a little bit tough to tell. But anyway, so those are three of the main ones. There's also in the cool season annual weeds, there's rabbit's foot clover, there's shepherd's purse, there's prickly lettuce, and there's Persian speedwell. And the speedwell, it kind of looks cool in a way. It grows really flat on the ground, has a bluish flower that may be smaller than an eraser on a pencil, so that you go, wow, maybe that's something I should keep around. No. because they become more and more and more and more. So as these things are flowering, even, you know, in times when you think, how could something be flowering this late? They're just dropping seeds, and then those seeds are going to just drop. So consequently, that's the advantage of putting a pre-emergent down. If you have an annual weed problem, there's two different types. There's the cool season type, and then there's a warm season type. But the ones that are growing right now that are obvious, that are visible, are the, you know, the cool season ones. So just keep that in mind when you go out and you start looking around, walking around your landscape and everything else. If you see something that looks suspect, then maybe take a couple leaves, take it to your favorite garden center, have them take a look at it, or just identify it yourself. It's not that difficult to do. So just, this is a good time of year to really do some evaluations on lots of different things, whether it's your lawn, whether it's your perennial beds, whether it's your broadleaf evergreens. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after the news.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline, tip of the trowel hour, which I'll be giving that shortly. But right now, you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. Mr. Kelly, before you slip out, I said, what are you doing watching that video? Anyway, so you do holiday decorations, you said.
Yeah, we did some this year, quite a bit.
Traditional tree, that type thing?
We have a fake tree. But we have a traditional tree. And then we have a little white tree that's all blue lights and blues ornaments. So a St. Louis blues tree.
Whoa.
And then Sue got out a little silver tree that we put a few decorations on. So yeah, we got a little bit going on. And then on the outside, we have a lattice that goes along the side of our back porch. Mm-hmm. And we put a lot of lights up on there. And, and then I have my Snoopy in the mailbox that opens up out on the back porch, on the screened-in porch.
So is that an inflatable type thing?
That's not, the inflatable Snoopy was out front, but the snow just crushed him.
Oh,
he looks so sad laying there. Oh. Face plant right in the snow. Poor guy. And then, but the other Snoopy, it has a Christmas tree, and then when the door opens to the mailbox, it has Woodstock. Not anymore. Now it's got a Stanley Cup instead of the Christmas tree. And a blue note that comes out of the mailbox.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Man, customized.
Yeah, so it's all customized. You know, it's kind of funny, though, as you drive around in the daytime nowadays, all the inflatables that are deflated. I saw there was a tweet last week where somebody had a Yoda standing there with the lightsaber,
mm-hmm.
and then all the deflatables or inflatables are all flat on the ground.
Except him?
Yeah, it looks like he just went in there and just went zoom, zoom, zoom. So it's kind of funny, you know, you see that.
Right.
Like, yeah, those poor Santa Claus, boom, face plant. It's like, oh.
And also, they have to, people have to realize when those things deflate during the day,
mm-hmm.
especially when the temperatures are, you know, going to rise like they are now, and the humidity is very high underneath that, you're setting a scenario for fungus in your lawn.
Oh, there you go. See, it's a good thing I brought that up. So be careful, folks. Keep those inflatables inflated.
Right.
All right.
24 hours a day. Yeah, there's a house close to near Hampton and Chippewa.
Mm-hmm.
And they have so many inflatables, they have their entire front yard filled. I mean, almost shoulder to shoulder. It is amazing. They must have like 40 or 50 of them in the front of their house.
And are they on all the time, or they all?
We've been there in the daytime, and they're on.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're on all the time or not, but it's amazing how many they have.
Yeah, that's the thing now.
You aren't kidding. You know? I have none myself.
You don't? No. Do you decorate much?
Yeah, we decorate quite a bit, but we go for more, I guess, more traditional type stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Same here for the most part. But I had to get a Snoopy. Come on, you know, you got to have a Snoopy doghouse.
Exactly. Well, thanks. And by the way, folks, thanks to you for having me on your show. We're here. We can discuss plant selection, caring for the ups and downs of annuals. The pansies, I actually have seen some pansies that have survived. I haven't seen them since the snow, but they survived that cold spell earlier. How about your bulbs? Amaryllis. Plenty of amaryllis still for sale in lots of different stores. Very easy to care for. They're already potted up, many of them. All you have to do is bring them in your house. And as I said before, the temperatures are not too bad right now. But even something like that, when it's super cold, you just don't want it to get cold in your car or between the retail store where you buy it and going out to your car and then from your car into your house. But amaryllis are really easy to care for, and the flowers will end up being probably 4 to 6 inches across. And it's just it's a bulb. You don't have to do too much to it. Once they finish flowering, you just cut off the flower stalk, and then it'll produce some foliage, long strap green foliage, which is nice. You know, all the way you get to watch the or just look at the green foliage all the way until, oh, let's say September or so. Then you chop it off, and then it'll get the cycle back for flowering. Other houseplants as well, your lawn, your perennials, your roses, your shrubs, your trees, your vines, or your water gardens. Hopefully your water gardens have been covered, so all the fall leaves that have already fallen and not blown into there, especially if you have fish in your water garden, because fallen leaves in the water can be toxic to your fish. But please remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered to you to maybe give some consideration. And across the big board, James is producing today, so when you call, James just needs your name and where you're calling from, and that's all he... Then he'll sort of send it via computer over to me, and I'll be able to talk to you. During the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, where my email and phone number are listed, and we can schedule a walk and talk. Also, people give walk and talks as holiday presents. So if you're interested, just contact me, and I can email you the gift certificates that you can give to somebody. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for an individual group or a situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Excuse me. I know there's a cough button I'm supposed to push, but I don't push any buttons here. Anyway, tip of the trowel goes out, first of all, to Joe Geerling. Joe Geerling had been the top engineer here at the radio station for 30-plus years. He was in charge of the main transition when we moved from the riverfront to where we are now in the Park Pacific building. He was here. I mean, he's pretty much been in charge of everything. But after 30 years, he decided it was time to move on. So a tip of the trowel goes out to Joe Geerling for making it so everything that is here was, you know, has been unbelievably working well. So tip of the trowel goes out to Joe Geerling and also the Missouri Botanical Garden. Tip of the trowel goes out to them because tomorrow they're celebrating Hanukkah between 12 and 4, Hanukkah Festival of Lights. So that's going to be tomorrow, first day of winter. So the Botanical Garden, if you're interested in the Hanukkah, they're going to have gifts and all kinds of other stuff as well at the Missouri Botanical Garden. So that's the tip of the trowel for today. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
Weekday mornings at 8:30, Charlie Brennan and Amy Marks-Kors provide perspective on KMOX and KMOX.com.
Yes, folks, questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Remember, if you have a cool season lawn, also don't drain your mower if you have a gas-powered mower and keep it charged up because you do not want those blades on your lawn to elongate too much because when we get another snow or whatever, sleet or anything like that, it's going to lay them down on top of each other and it's going to create a winter fungus problem. And you're wondering if this snow has put winter fungus onto your lawn? Well, just go out there and take a look and you'll notice there's if you do have a fungus, there's two major wintertime funguses and they both have a kind of a pink tint to them. Now, they're not deadly like the summertime funguses are, but what they do is just weaken your lawn, so consequently, it could be problematic a lot sooner and a lot more tragically and dramatically in the summertime if you do get another fungus situation. So there's really not too much you can do this time of year. Don't bother spraying fungicides or anything at all, but just keep your grass at a height probably, you know, around 2.5 to 3 inches. And that's the best thing you can possibly do to avoid this problem. So let's head over to Illinois and go into Ruth's yard. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Mike. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, did I understand you correctly one day on a Saturday, you do not do any more designing?
No,
planning?
I don't. No,
oh, okay,
designing.
Okay, because you plan my... Oh, come on, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no designing anymore. I just do consultations.
Okay. All right. Because you did design my backyard, which it is growing. It is getting there. But anyway, I thought I understood that because I've been referring you to some people, and I stopped it because I thought, man, I think I understood him correctly. But all I really wanted to let you know and some of the listeners is those rosemary trees are available at Deerberg's.
Oh, really?
I just bought two. I'm on my way to buy another one. Whoa. Yeah. They're small. They're small.
Sure, right.
You know.
They're like...
You know, and they come like a... Yeah, about... Well, what do you think? About a foot tall?
Yeah,
maybe a little bit taller.
A foot at the maximum. Let's say any place between 12 and 14 inches. And they're in a, let's say, like probably a four or six-inch pot.
Inch pot, right. Right. Well, they have them, unless they're sold out. But I am on the way to get another one. So I just wanted to let you know. I heard the lady call in, and she said, what about Deerberg? I said, oh, yeah. Tell her. Anyway, I'll let you go.
You
I just wanted to, sure, have a good Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, basically what it was is, you know, I'm over 70 years old now, and the designs, you know, I really enjoyed them. I'd been designing for decades. But I thought, you know, it's sort of like why I stopped teaching at the Botanical Garden, why I stopped teaching at the community college. It's just energy and time and everything else. I just thought, nah, you know, it's just kind of time to shed off something else. So now I do the radio show, and basically I do the consultations, and that's kind of it. So no formal designs anymore. So thanks for asking and to getting that straight. And good luck on getting another rosemary tree at Deerberg's. Sorry, Deerberg's. I didn't realize that you have. We go to Deerberg's. We go to Snooks. We go to, you know, local stores. But sometimes we don't necessarily go through the florist area. And I'm assuming that's where they would be. Where anyway, let's head out to Springfield, Illinois. We haven't been there for a couple weeks. And go into Harold's yard. Hi, Harold.
Hi, sir. I just got one quick question. I was doing a calculation of this radioactivity in fertilizers, and I just did some assumptions, and I'm really not an expert in this, but I determined that some of the things I read that you can only put like 4 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet per year, and then depending on what how much percent nitrogen you buy and how many applications, I came up with about 3 to 20 pounds per year, basically 1 to 4 applications. Does that sound reasonable, or am I off in some any way there? Or what do you think on those calculations?
No, I think, you know, that sounds pretty reasonable. Basically what it is if you put too much nitrogen down, it could cause problems because it can actually dehydrate root systems and soils and things like that. So that's sort of the disadvantage of, you know, overdoing the nitrogen.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
Certainly. My pleasure. And also nitrogen can cause a lot of above ground growth, and then the roots, you know, are not equal to the above ground growth, and then ultimately the plants can end up being unhealthy. So that's why you got to watch out for that. So if anybody else has any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Perfect time of year. The ground's probably, I don't think it's frozen, but it's a good time to get a soil test done. And if you haven't done a soil test at all, get one done. And this is a good time. Take the soil samples. And if you live on the Missouri side, you can drop off the soil samples at the University of Missouri Extension Office, which is in Kirkwood. Illinois, I don't think the University of Illinois is doing the soils testing anymore, but there are private labs, you know, in the metropolitan area over in Illinois. There's one in Belleville for sure. And what the soil test is going to do is going to let you know, like the gentleman was just talking about, that maybe it's not going to, a soil test will never show that you have nitrogen in your soil, because nitrogen only stays in the ground or on the ground for a few days. And actually then it becomes a gas and heads up into the air. But when we have lightning strikes, then the nitrogen comes back down. So that's why a lot of times after lightning storms, your lawn really looks great because it's been top dressed or top, you know, dressed with nitrogen out of the air. Now, the phosphorus and potassium, those are the two major other nutrients. There's also micronutrients as well. But the phosphorus and potassium, they help, you know, other aspects of going, you know, having a healthy lawn. But if you've been putting the same fertilizer down year after year after year after year, it's trouble because the nitrogen or the phosphorus and potassium stay in the soil for years. And then that can become extravagant as far as the amount. And that can do some major damage to your plant material where you think you're doing the best for your plants when actually you're doing some harm for your plants. So let's head over to Don's yard, and Don lives in O'Fallon. Hi, Don.
How you doing this morning?
Very good.
I've been wanting to call in for a long time, and maybe you're my answer. I've got a yard that's 5 years old. Every year, it's old clay is what it is from a new home being built. And every year, I'm either eat up with weeds, and I have, you know, a fair amount of grass, or I have more grass and maybe sometimes a little less weed. But either year, I say, do I put down grass seed or I put down fertilizer? So I usually pick one, and 3 years in a row, I overseeded it. And it seemed to help for a little while, and then the weeds have really taken me over last year. And I just don't know what to do with my yard anymore. I don't know how to bring it back around.
Basically, you know, you have to kind of start from the beginning. So you need to do something called core aeration, which is, you know, a lawn service will come out with a machine and they take, you know, like wine bottle cork sized plugs out of the ground. So they're going to be about 2 inches, you know, long, maybe not quite 2 inches, but close, and about, let's say, half an inch or to three quarters of an inch in, you know, as far as how wide they are. Then after the core aeration, you're going to spread compost. And the reason why you're doing this is because you're going to feed your soil. So you can fool around with all this fertilizing and everything else, but until you get a good, healthy soil, and you said your soil isn't healthy because it's new construction and it's compacted clay soils, and so consequently, you know, until you start getting a richer, better soil, you're going to be doing the same thing year after year after year after year. And it's going to take several years to finally get your soil up to a healthy point, but at least you'll be making progress through that. So that's kind of what, you know, the best advice I can give you is just, and probably like I was talking about just now, getting a soil test done and finding out what there is there, because you may be putting down fertilizers that are doing more harm than good for the, you know, for the lawn that you do have.
All righty. Well, it sounds like a place to start. I'll take your advice and try that. I have core aerated, and I can see some good, healthy soil coming up, but I do know the underlying probably after 5 years even is still probably pretty much clay.
Right.
You know, in 5 years I've been doing one or the other, like I said, seeding or I fertilize.
Right.
And I've done more seeding, I think, than fertilize. But last year, I mean, weeds, maybe everybody got it. I mean, I'm just eat up with weeds.
Yeah, certain years it depends upon the weather and all kinds of other factors as well. And there's certainly two different kinds of weeds. There's the annual type weeds and there's the perennial type weeds. And the combination of both, it's really difficult to get them under control.
I won't take much more of your time here, but one other question. I've got some of the crawling weeds that just seem like they crawl and expand all over the place or spread. They're like little limbs going everywhere. And sometimes I think they have a yellow or purple flower on them. And, you know, I've got that pretty bad. So that's one of my weed issues, I guess.
Yeah, take a look at a weed called Speedwell, Persian, P-E-R-S-I-A-N, Persian Speedwell, online and see if that's the weed that you have.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
Certainly. My pleasure. And now let's go to Spanish Lake and go into Rich's yard. Hi, Rich.
Mike, how are you doing today?
Very good.
This time of year, I'm a gardener who's looking for something to do. And I find that if I take some thumb-sized elephant ear tubers that I've collected in the fall and plant two or three, four of them maybe in an 8-inch pot with a potting mix, I will get the neatest philodendron-looking like plants, use a southern window, keep the planting mix moist but not soggy, and it just makes some interest this time of year. And come spring, I put them outside, and they do okay, and let them go from there.
Great.
It's just something I thought somebody might be thinking of.
Right, so you're talking about philodendron, the tropical house plant that has, some of them have green leaves, some of them have green, you know, yellow stripes on the leaves and things like that. Is that correct?
No, not really. What I'm talking about is when I take my elephant ears out.
Oh, the elephant ears.
when I take my elephant ear tubers, which I have lots and lots of them,
right.
there's always some thumb-sized tubers that grow with the bigger plants.
Okay.
And I salvage those thumb-sized ones to put in potting mix in the wintertime in the house, and it makes a philodendron-looking-like plant.
Right. I'm sorry I misunderstood the elephant ears. That's one of my favorite summertime bulbs for sure.
And if you get kind of bored, you're looking for something to do, you plant these thumb-sized ones, and I know you've gotten some of them.
Right.
And it makes an interesting plant. Gives you kind of something to do and look forward to.
Well, great. Thanks for the insight.
Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have a couple phone lines open, so give us a call.
Kelly and Hancock, and we wanted to wish you and your family a happy holidays.
A Merry Christmas.
Come on, Hancock.
Come
happy
on,
holidays.
Michael. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays from KMOX.
Yes, happy holidays for you, and tomorrow is Hanukkah, so happy Hanukkah as well. Let's head out to O'Fallon. This might be the fourth or fifth time we've been there. Some are Illinois, some are Missouri O'Fallons, but anyway, this is Bob. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good, Mike. Illinois, by the way.
Aha.
And I'm trying to grow, or I have been growing knockout roses, one of them in a pot, because I'm tired of paying for them, and then even mulching and everything else, I lost two of them, so that's a lot of money for 1 year of growth. So I tried that, and I've got a south-facing window, so I didn't let it die off. I just let it stay in the south-facing window, but it didn't do that much this last summer. Does it need to have die off, or will it? Is it better to let it die? What do the greenhouses do to grow them, ready to sell? Do they let them freeze off and then let them spring back in the spring, or do they just let them be in the sunlight and the warmth all year long? What's the best way to do that?
So you have knockout roses inside in a pot?
No, they didn't die. I had them go through last winter in a south-facing window, and it did okay, but it never really bounced back like it should.
Yeah, they need spring. So I'm misunderstanding. Do you have them outside planted in the ground?
No, in a pot.
In a pot indoors.
And I moved them indoors last winter.
Yeah,
this winter I let them die back, and figure I'll try that one. But
right.
do the greenhouses not let them die back? They just grow them all year long until they sell them, or what?
Yeah, they basically grow them outside, so they don't have them in greenhouses or anything. So they stay outside all the time. I mean, they have them in pots and ready to go. So and sometimes they have coal frames, which is a kind of a greenhouse that's not heated. So they can have them ready for, sales earlier in the season. But, yeah, for the most part, they got to be outside. They got to go through, let's say, all the weather changes. So if you're feeding them every month and with a rose food and they're in a bright, sunny location where they're not competing with any kind of tree roots or anything like that, they're pretty tough and durable. Why you're having problems, I'm not exactly sure.
Well, everybody in our area, not everybody, but I know some people that have a lot of them, they lost like 30% of them last winter, and it wasn't even that cold, and they mulch and all that, and they're not old plants. I don't know if they're getting weaker or what.
Well, sometimes putting knockout roses really, only a couple inches of mulch. Some people try to, mulch them like they are hybrid teas or grandiflores or floribunda type roses, which need 8 to 10 inches of mulch. With the knockout roses, since they're a shrub type, they don't need that type, that much mulch, and it could be problematic from a moisture standpoint, and that could lead to, let's say, some root rot.
Okay, that might be what it is, then. Too much mulch, and then it doesn't get the moisture that it's normally going to get, like now the snow's melting, so it's going to go down in there.
Right.
That could be it.
So too much mulch can be.
I appreciate your help.
Yeah. So too much mulch can be as problematic as no mulch. And with the knockouts, a lot of times I grew them for years in pots, and I never mulched them at all. So it's just too much mulch can be trouble. And especially what type of mulch, because as the mulch breaks down, if I'm assuming they're not pulling it back, or then it starts binding up nutrients and things like that, and really causes problems from that standpoint, as well as the moisture factor. So good luck, Bob.
All right. Thank you.
Certainly. And now let's see, where do we want to head? Whoa, we're going to Lake St. Louis. First time today and into John's yard. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Good. Thanks for your service. Hey, I'm going to try to explain this as quickly as I can without taking up too much time. But I live on a hill in a neighborhood, on a hill, and my neighbor's house above me is probably 18 to 20 feet above me, their foundation. That creates some drainage issues. And then I have my gutters and a French drain all feeding into a natural swale on a tree line in the backyard. The neighbors before me cleared that area to open up the yard. And so basically I'm getting a lot of flooding when it rains a lot into that swale.
Right.
So my question is, what type of ground plant, like honeysuckle or something like that, could I plant in that swale area back there to suck up a lot of the water?
So do you want a ground cover or you want some shrubs?
Some shrubs.
Some shrubs. I'd probably maybe just do a big, massive planting of a shrub called red twig dogwood.
Okay.
And the red twig dogwood, get the variegated leaf one. So in the summertime, it'll look like a big snowbank along there. In the wintertime, the foliage will fall off. And then the younger leaves or younger stems, sorry, branches will be bright red.
Interesting. Okay. Now, is that going to work? So the tree line in the back, my house is on the north side of that tree line. So sometimes I've planted some hemlocks back there, but they don't get enough sunlight on the north side of the tree line.
Right.
Will that work okay? The
red twig dogwood can take sun, and it can take shade, and it can take wet. So that's
cool.
Why I'm recommending that.
Thank you.
Certainly. My pleasure. Yeah, red twig dogwood, just, and like I say, get the one with there are green-leafed ones, but get the ones with a variegated leaf because they're pale green and white. So then, like I said, in the summertime, it'll give you a totally different look. And now let's head to Eureka and go into Sue's yard. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
We're not going to be in the yard. We're going to be inside today. I brought in a mandevilla plant. It was just, it bloomed so beautifully, and it was already potted nicely, so I brought it in. Do they winter over at all?
Aesthetically, no. They will survive,
okay.
But aesthetically, they don't like the insides.
I see. Okay.
I mean, I fooled around with them a couple years, and I finally just, stopped fooling around with them as far as bringing them back in. So I just almost treated them like a type of annual, even though they're
okay.
Woody stemmed and everything else, but they just really look ugly for the most part. And I even had them under grow lights in the basement, and they just didn't do well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this is it. It's growing. It's tentacles, trying to find something to climb on.
Right,
and I keep cutting those back. Okay, the other thing is I've had a beautiful hibiscus for the last 2 years, and I brought it in. It was loaded with blooms, and it bloomed profusely for the first 6 weeks or so after I had it in. It still has some buds, but it's yellowing out, and I didn't have that last year. Of course, it's much larger than it was
right. Last
year. Can I just cut that back?
You can, but it's not going to help. Hibiscus is another one of those plants. Some people have great luck with them, that have like sliding glass doors facing south, and they rotate them and they do everything else and they don't overwater. But hibiscus is another one of those just doesn't like it in the indoors.
Okay. Now, you said you regulate the water. I thought you were supposed to water those a lot.
No. Nothing gets watered a lot inside, or very few things.
Oh.
So overwatering.
Maybe that's why it's yellowing.
It could be, but you're going to get yellowish foliage and foliage dropping and flower buds dropping regardless.
Okay. What about the poinsettias? Do they get a lot of water?
You just basically want to make sure that take your finger and push down, and if the potting mix that they're growing in feels damp on your fingertip, then don't water them.
Okay. Do you fertilize anything that blooms like that in the winter?
If you're going to fertilize when it's in bloom, yes, like Christmas cactus or anything that's blooming, but only fertilize at half label rate. Don't fertilize at full label rate.
Okay. Well, when the leaves turn red, is that considered blooming?
No, that's the leaf is a leaf. The flower, the flower on a poinsettia is a little bitty tiny thing that's yellow.
Okay.
So those red leaves are bracts, B-R-A-C-T-S. That's not a related to the flower whatsoever.
Okay. Well, I've been doing it all wrong.
You should have called years ago.
I'll change my ways. Have a good holiday, Mike. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. Questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we've got a couple open phone lines. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We're heading to Dave's yard, and Dave lives in Afton. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Mike. How you doing this morning?
Very good.
Hey, talking about elephant ears, what's the best way that you'd recommend to winter them after you dig them up?
Basically, I take them, I shake all the soil off of them, I put them in paper bags, because I have quite a few, so then in between each layer, I put newspaper, and then I just put them in the basement.
Okay, so you don't mess with peat moss and all that stuff?
No.
Okay, great.
I guess you could, but I don't see any reason to, because when you see them for sale, they're basically just in cardboard boxes. You know, with nothing around them.
Okay, they sure are. And then I have a bunch of tulip bulbs I never got in.
Whoops.
Am I better off trying to find a good time, or should I just try to save them for next year?
Probably if you get them in the ground, they're probably not going to get a root system established enough. So next spring, you're not going to likely get flower. You might get some foliage, but then that would be for the future. But tulips, the way they've been hybridized over the years, you're only going to get a couple years out of the tulips. If you want to try and you got some, let's say, 6 or 8 inch, plastic pots, just put them in the plastic pots with potting mix and try to get them to bloom inside.
Okay, good idea. Thanks so much.
Sure. Forcing bulbs inside, ideally you would have already had them potted up, but I would do that as opposed to just kind of leaving them or trying to put them in the ground, because that's a lot of work. And at least in pots, you can get them, taken care of pretty quick and without a whole lot of effort and strain and everything else. So good luck with that.
Okay, nice. Thank you so much. Bye.
Sure. And let's head now to Sunset Hills. Hi, Randy. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. I have a question about my African violets. It's time for me to transplant them. And I checked online, and they said to use a specific soil for African violets. But I only need about 2 handfuls of soil. Can I use potting mix?
Yeah, you certainly can. African violet mix is going to be the best because it's formulated for the African violet specifically. And you can get relatively small bags of that at garden centers.
Oh, okay. The only ones I found so far were huge.
Really? And it said African violet mix on it, and it was a huge bag? I'm talking about like 1 or 2 quart bags.
Yeah. They were larger than that, but I hadn't gone to the actual nursery itself. I'll try that.
Right. Also, what you can do is go online to Missouri Botanical Garden website, and the African Violet Society meets there, and see if you can find a contact name for the African Violet Society. They may be able to give you a tip on where to be able to get it, in smaller quantities or smaller amounts.
Very good. I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah, the garden has all kinds of plant societies that meet there. And if you're really into them, of course, then you could start attending the meetings, the African Violet Society. So when I was working at the Botanical Garden, I actually, with another couple staff members, my last year at the garden, 4 years was in the English Woodland Garden. In my 5th year, I decided to go back and work in the Climatron because I'd been, I went to the Climatron the first year it opened in 1960 when I was in sixth grade. So, but I became a judge for the African Violet Society's show. So it was really kind of fun, and they're great. Yeah, I mean, great people. So that's the true with any kind of the society. So thanks, Randy, for calling. And this is a good time of year to head out and take a look up into your trees. One of the three sugar maples that I have, the one that faces actually this across, you know, which is across the street from the park, you know, I noticed, and you probably heard me maybe tell a little bit about this, you know, off and on, that, you know, some of the bark was sloughing off. And I'm not talking off the trunk. It was looked like it was, you know, probably on a branch that was like 3 to 4 inches caliper. Now, this one maple has two different branches that are dead. So I've been thinking maybe I should go out and cut those down so they don't ultimately fall and hit somebody's car that's parked underneath them or something like that. But I'm still kind of waiting to see, you know, overall, I know they're dead. They're not going to do anything because they've got sections where there's no bark whatsoever. So whenever you get a situation like that, whether it's around the trunk or whether it's around a branch, if there's no bark, then there can be no translocation of nutrients because all the veins of the tree that translocates nutrients and moisture up to the leaves are right below the bark. And then once the bark is gone, there's no protected layer. There's no more veins there. So that branch is dead, or that tree is dead if it's a, you know, if it's all the way around the trunk. That's why a lot of, you know, if you want to, let's say, make somebody really mad, just go over, sneak over in their yard and cut the bark all the way around the trunk, and then you can kill their tree because you're tired of their tree. I'm kidding. But don't do that. But, you know, just realize that, you know, bark is extremely important, but also equally as important structurally is the heartwood, and that's the inside wood like that's used for firewood and things like that. So the bark is where the veins are and the protection from sun, scalding, and everything like that. But the heartwood, somebody sent me an email with a picture, and he had a tree that had some super heartwood rot. And I said, structurally, the tree's going to just slowly but surely go downhill. But because the bark was still in place, there was still foliage and branches and everything else. But anyway, everybody have a great Christmas. Have a great Hanukkah. Mike Miller, KMWX, Garden Hotline.